What's good, everybody? It is our favorite time of the year here at the Black Effect. We're heading down to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival. And we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcast festival for more details.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
And I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
We ask the questions you always want to know, but no one ever asks.
Let's cut to it.
I should know it's on.
If you ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know.
I should know it's on.
It's on.
We've got Alana Rizzo, a 7-time Emmy winner. She's a host and reporter for the MLB Network, and she's the founder and president of Guidry's Guardian, a nonprofit for rescuing dogs. Alana Rizzo on the Cut to It podcast. Get iced up.
Here we go. Okay. Would you rather meet your grandchildren or great grandparents?
Oh, great grandparents. I'd love to know the history of where I came from. I don't have kids of my own. So the likelihood of me meeting my grandkids is slim to none.
Okay.
So I would say great grandparents. My mom is from Cuba. My dad is, my grandparents on my dad's side are Italian. So I'd love to meet my great, great grandparents to find out where I came from.
I kind of like those questions because you never know what you're going to get from people. Like that was cool. To hear. So that's good because that opens it up to a lot of other questions. Someone that's Cuban American and Italian and grown up in Colorado.
Yeah,
get
I think
to that
I'm the only,
later.
And the only Cuban ever in Colorado.
Yeah. Check that off. I assumed it, but now I'm right. Pat myself on the back. All right. What do you like to do when you're alone?
I'm not alone a ton. I'm never the type of person that says I need space. So, I'm not alone. I'm not alone a ton. I have a great fiance that I like spending time with. It's fun when we're alone, cause we're usually around. We either have the kids here or, family here, which is fine. I actually just moved to the East Coast. I used to live in Los Angeles for years. So we were doing coast to coast. So, yeah, it's nice to be in one spot with him for sure.
Hmm. My wife would definitely tell me to kick rocks. So,
would say kick rocks.
No, nah, I'm
about to.
But I think everyone needs a little bit of their own time. So.
Well, I love this. Is one of the things that I've heard. Solitude is a great place to visit. However, it is a poor place to stay.
That's very well put. I do think there are times when you want to be alone and collect your thoughts, but absolutely. I'm a very outgoing person. I love people. I love being around people. I love to entertain.
So
I love to eat really good food, drink really good wine.
So how do you recharge? Is it around people?
Yeah, I think so. I think being around family is good. I love to travel. I love the beach. So I'm looking forward to January. I'm going to Mexico. We're going to Maui. I recharge by being around people. I don't sleep a ton. So that's not what does it for me. Work out when I can. Not like you used to work out, but you know, maybe you still do. I don't know.
I still have to work out. it's a great place for me. It's where I clear my thoughts, get my thoughts together. Think a lot. Question a lot, get some get some answers that I don't like sometimes. It gives me a sense, to some degree, outside of business stuff and work. It gives me some sense of real purpose when I can accomplish something, because I can start to feel my body at times, like, hey, fat boy, we're getting a little chubby today, or hey, we haven't. Well, because my body started to say, hey, we sitting around all day, or answering the phone, or walking up the steps, or going to the mailbox, like, we need to do more than that, right? It's, if you have a, obviously with your foundation, and I'm assuming you have a dog, right?
I do.
Right? So yeah. You know, if that dog, and I have a working dog, I have a Belgian Malinois. So if she is not walked, she will start to pace.
Yep.
The island in our kitchen. And my wife's like, babe, have you taken her on a walk? So usually what I do is I'll get up and work out, and my cool down is taking her on a walk.
That's important. I had a border collie. That's who the foundation's named after, Guidry. And border collies are incredibly, like Malinois, they're incredibly, incredibly smart. And yes, they need to be worked, and they need to be active mentally and physically stimulated. And he was the same way. If he didn't get exercise, he would be very anxious. And my dog now, Bentley, I rescued her as well. That's what the foundation's about, getting dogs off the streets and out of high kill shelters. And she's not as active as Guidry used to be, but I feel you when it comes to, and I don't work out like I should, but I can understand how much it helps your mental state too, especially when you've done it for so long. I mean, that's all you've known for so long, is to have to be in shape, have to work out, have to keep your body right. So when my fiance is a professional athlete as well, and you know, he's not playing anymore, but when he doesn't work out, it affects him mentally. And I'm obviously, Steve, you know that better than anybody. So it's important. You got to keep your mind right. And for him, it's working out too.
What's funny is I didn't know that for a long time.
Really?
Yeah, the working out. For me, I stopped working out because I didn't want my body to think that we were going back to play. So I had to actually stop. And then that wasn't good. And because then my body started to, you know, it's like the mind as you get older. You got to keep stimulating it, or, you know, keep the wheels going, keep them oil, slow down. And so my body started to slow down. My knees started hurting, some of that stuff. And then I was going back to working out. But then when I started back working out, my body was like, hey, we're going to play football. So it's just kind of like, it was like,
you got to find a happy place.
Yeah, it was find a happy place. So the happy place for me is just kind of, you know, I'll run, I'll bike, I'll do a little bit, but nothing over the top, but then also nothing pedestrian-like. So I got to find that. I'm still trying to find, you know, living in North Carolina, like a NASCAR driver, I'm trying to find that groove on the road. So when I hit all those left turns, my tires have enough tread to know how to do it, and I'm still figuring it out. I'm almost there.
I think it takes time. It takes time for him. You know, he stopped playing a couple of years ago. And if that's all you guys have known since the time in your itty bitty, making sure that your body is right to have a career and sustain, it's one thing to get into the league, whatever the league it is. It's another thing entirely to stay. Mm-hmm. And then when you're done and that's taken away, or you choose to walk away, it's an interesting balance to make sure that you can still maintain and not go crazy.
Preach. I hear you. Over there dropping nuggets. I like it. All right. Favorite spot to go to now that COVID. So COVID has happened. We all been in the house. All of a sudden is now, man, I am not going where?
Maui. We go to Maui every year. Dialed okay. In. Absolutely love it. We are foodies, and I love Maui. Everywhere we have a place to go every night. That's where I go to unplug. You asked me what I do to recharge. Maui. We go once a year. We didn't go this year, obviously. We couldn't go last year. Nope. We got engaged in Maui.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that's my spot.
She said, forget the gym. It's Maui.
Yep, oh yeah, no, I'm not going to the gym. That's not
like
my favorite.
I like that a lot more.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, the gym's not last on the list, but it's not high up.
Yeah, it's real low though.
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna say, doesn't take multi-hour flight, but you know, it's pretty dope though.
Knowing how much you travel, knowing how much you like to travel, right? You're with the Dodgers. You're doing that deal with MLB Network, right? So what is your go-to meal while you're traveling, right? Because of all these different airports, hotels, city, on the go, what do you go to say, hey, I'm here, no matter where it is, if it's a good airport, bad airport, good city, terrible city, rain, sleet, snow, summer, what is your go-to meal on the go or snack on the go? Ooh. I say meal because it's on the go, so it can't be like you're not getting a steak with,
steak on a stick.
Ew, whoa. Disgusting. Well, they'll have that in Maui, and it will be really, really good.
A luau on a stick.
Yes.
If I could have anything, it would probably be Cuban food. So if we went to Miami, it would be cafe, you know, in Calle Ocho in Cafe Versailles, I would get the vaca frita, tostones maduros, yuca frita, and congri. It would be Cuban food.
That's funny.
Gun to my head, too. Cuban food.
Shut up, Joe.
Yuca frita sounds like fries a little bit.
It is. It's like a. It's like a root. It kind of tastes like a potato, but it's a root.
Man, y'all so just missed the fact amazing. That I don't speak Cuban, but I just picked that up.
You speak the yuca. Yeah, you can beat the yuca like a number of different places outside of.
Man, shut up,
yeah.
Suckers.
Yeah. You get no bad for that.
Damn, my bad. I barely know English.
My bad. That I'm cultured.
I barely know English. All right, I like that. That's cool. For me, my go-to always because I travel a lot for work. Smoothie or acai bowl?
Acai bowl. That's healthy. You're a lot healthier than I am.
I grew up in L.A., so I still got those kind of homeopathic. And
L.A. is the best place I ever lived.
Homeopathic. We're meaning
can I get
like.
It, can I get it? Can I get it in a root word?
I need help with that. You ready? Organic.
Okay, there you go.
So like right now, my wife is she orders a lot of vitamin supplements. Zinc, vitamin C, pill form, powder form. We have a defrother, not for coffee, for the supplements to help mix it up, right? Zinc, vitamin D, vitamin B12.
Sounds like a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. That's what she deals with. And then she gives me a to-go bag for morning, evening. I've been having some, I wear eyeglasses. I have to wear them about 3 hours a day. And because constantly looking at screens, my eyes been twitching, like they're getting lazy and all that stuff. So my wife looked up without me going back to the doctor to get a stronger prescription in eyeglasses. She looked up some stuff and gave me some supplements to help strengthen my eyes and stop the twitching. Now, when she brought it up, I was kind of like, man. Yeah. Listen, hey, boo. Give me my eyesight, please. Stop twitching.
You know they got stuff for your eyesight. They got supplements for that.
Or you wear a monocle.
I don't know what that is, but I feel like it's a joke.
No, it's just the one like Mr. Peanut, just like that one eye thing.
Oh yeah,
that would look good. That would look classy.
Oh,
mono. On TV.
Mono. Yeah. Mono means one. I got it.
There you go.
Hold on. You laugh and didn't even know what it was.
I saw him look it up. I had to break it down. You got to break the word down.
They were eye talking. He. All right, let's get to it. Enough jokes on me. Where are you from in a place you call your hometown?
I was born in Colorado Springs, but if I had to say home, I'd probably say LA, Manhattan Beach. I lived there for 7 years and I was never happier than when I was living there. I just love LA. I love the weather. I love, you just feel motivated. You feel like doing stuff. You feel productive. Everyone's out working out. You have good food options. I love the mood. My mood changes by the weather. So that seasonal depression stuff is real. And LA is 80 every day. And I just felt good there. I felt happy. I mean, I love living on the East Coast with my fiance because I live in one place now, whereas before we were back and forth all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's a pain. But there's just something about living by the water and something about the vibe of the South Bay that I loved. Mm. I love living there. I love everything about, I lived on My apartment was a piece of garbage. It was like 600 square feet, and it was a train wreck. But it was $1 billion. Yeah,
a month.
It was $1 billion, but it was 4 blocks from the water. Hmm. And there's just something about that, you know, that to come out and see the Pacific Ocean, and then I don't know, I loved it. So I'd have to say, if I could live anywhere in the United States, it'd be Manhattan Beach. Hmm.
Okay. So which do you consider to shape you? Like which place? I mean, other than the obvious geographical differences. Like which
yeah,
one sh-
you know,
which
I've been. It's that I've been all over the country. I lived internationally too. So I grew up, born and raised in Colorado Springs, and then this job took me everywhere. Yeah, I went from I've lived in every time zone. So I went from Colorado to Texas, Texas to Wisconsin, Wisconsin back to Colorado, Colorado, New York, New York, LA, and now I live in Massachusetts. So, you know, I think my mom shaped me more than where I lived. You know, being a product of a single Cuban mother who did not play. Talk about side eye. I mean, she could just look at you and you knew you were dead. You know, she never had to raise a voice or raise a hand because that Cuban death stare, that's legit. So.
Oh, black mama's like that too.
Oh, yeah.
So black
and Hispanic moms.
So if your mom did raise her voice because randomly. Maybe Alana just did not listen this one time. Give me your best mom impression of her getting on your ass.
Oh, man. Trying to
in her language, too.
¿Qué clase de estúpido está? Hágame un favor y vaya para la cuarto. Porque yo no sé lo que tú estás haciendo, pero eso no hace aquí.
So I heard...
You gonna sit your ass down?
No,
you're gonna get this back in.
Here's what I heard. I don't want to have to tell you again. I'm only gonna tell you once. And I don't know is not a good answer.
Yeah, no, it was more of do you think? You know, you don't do that type of stuff here.
Damn,
we don't act like that type of crazy. I was a really good kid. It was more my sister, who's 7 years younger,
always is.
That would push the envelope.
Oh, okay,
you know,
cool. Snitch.
So
yep.
Cool.
Brianna was the one that would test the boundaries, yeah. Like, you know, sneaking out of the house, going into the woods and drinking beer. I would never. I was such a good goody two shoe kid because I was terrified of my Cuban mother. What she was, there's nothing a police officer could do to me that would be that's worse right. than what my yeah, mom would do to me. Yeah.
Well, you know, we have your sister online too. To see if that's serious.
Growing up in Colorado for you, you know, being a mother, having a mother that was Cuban American, right? And being a single mom, what was it like for you to experience that as a kid?
You know, I remember my parents got divorced when I was 10. So my dad wasn't really in the picture for probably 25 years of my life. Mm-hmm. And it was actually a tragedy in the family that brought everybody back together to a certain extent.
I'm sorry
to
hear that.
Oh, thank you. My mom was born and raised in Havana, Cuba. So she, with my grandparents, escaped the communist regime. And so it was like Little Havana is Miami, Florida. So she came to the States when she was 22. You know, the story that you've heard a million times, coming to the States for a better life. It was her, my grandparents, my uncle and my aunt. And my mom had already gone through university in Cuba. So she was a 22-year-old in Miami, Florida, a new culture, new experience. And she basically taught herself how to speak English by watching television. The commercials, the repetition of the commercials are what taught her how to speak English. Well, fast forward many, many years, and she ends up getting her master's degree and, you know, becomes a Spanish teacher, all the while doing it while raising two daughters on her own, working full time and going to school one class at a time. And we basically got our master's degrees around the same time. And just seeing that. My mom and I got our master's degrees around the same time period. Yeah.
Because
my mom was
really
going one class
cool.
at a time, you know, and wow. I did the traditional path, obviously, like I went to school and then I worked for 5 years and I went back to school to get a master's, and just the way that the timing worked out. So my mom is the most amazing woman. If I could be half the person she is, I'm good to go. So I was raised in a very strict household where you didn't do anything wrong, because my mom was killing herself to make it happen for us. And, you know, my dad wasn't in the picture. and my mom was everything. So to this day, I send my mom Father's Day cards. Because she's just an important figure in my life. Wow. And she never pressured me, but always supported me. And I think there's a big difference in that. So I'm very lucky that she's my mom.
What other attributes do you think you've gleaned from your mom?
I think work ethic, number one. Risking, kind of betting on yourself. You know, I completely switched gears to go back to school to get into journalism. Not putting up with anything, not putting up with any BS. You know, my dad sent like $283 bullshit dollars a month for two kids, you know, and my mom was at the time a secretary. And, you know, that's I always laugh at that Tupac song that, you know, mama made miracles every Thanksgiving, because that's kind of what I felt like. I didn't know we were broke. I didn't know we didn't have any money.
Most broke people don't know they broke.
There's actually a blessing in that. Because you don't know what you don't know. Yeah. You don't know what you don't have.
I get what you're saying. There's a protection in it. I mean, I've grown up similar, the same way. And it's been well into my 30s before I realized, like, dang, when we got that box and it had the white label that just had beans and pork, like, that was from the food bag. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that till
your 30s?
I mean, late 20s, 30s, realizing, like, when you look back and when you working in the industry, like, you realize, like, dang, that's what that was from. You don't know what you don't know back then.
I thought the definition of being rich was if I had leather seats in a car and a garage. I thought that's what it meant be rich.
If I went over someone's house and they had steps, I thought they were rich. If you had steps in your house, I was like, oh yeah, they're rich.
I'm thrown off because I knew my ass was poor way before I was about 20.
You figured that one out?
I figured that out.
No, I'm saying, but what I'm saying is what's revealed, even like those minor things where I think this is what Alana's saying, like you don't know what your mom goes through in order to get you. You just know you didn't miss a meal, but you don't know what your mom did in order to get that meal on the table. Like that stuff. At least for me, it didn't get revealed way later on, right? Like, of course, I knew my mom had two jobs. I knew she worked at the movies, and I know she had an admin job. Like, I knew that. But some of the things, the in-between stuff of like, all right, well, I just thought we had a box of food. I didn't know that the box of food came from the food bank because she went there on a Friday. But you go there on Friday, like stuff like that. Or because my grandma and my aunt had done that. So I didn't know.
I'm just kind of dumbing it down for me is I didn't know I was poor. But I knew, like, we were struggling. Like, I didn't realize in our 20s that we were poor. We didn't have anything. I realized it, like, 16, 17, 12. Like, the normalcy of food stamps for us, you're right. I had free lunch. So I knew that we didn't have a lot. But I knew my ass was poor. Like, I knew. Right.
Yeah, I didn't feel that way. I mean, we did free and reduced lunches too, but I don't think I had it, you know, to your level. I think there's people that in my life and my community that, you know, we certainly were fortunate to have more than that. And I just did, you know, I didn't, back in the day where there was a store called Pick and Save. And that was that was like, you know,
we would
discounted
go.
Clothing. And I remember my mom getting made fun of because like my mom had shirts from Pick and Save. Yep. And now it's like, you know, just stupid stuff. Yeah. I remember like saving money forever to buy my first pair of British Knights. And I bought my first pair of
BK ones.
But listen, my mom made me give them or take them back because she thought they meant blood killers.
That may or not be a good story on that.
That devastated me. I didn't know. I just wanted these pink and white BKs. I didn't know
about the hood.
And so it's just a, you know.
We
but
weren't
I wouldn't
no BKs
change my,
over at my house.
No, I had. I had more Payless shoe store shoes than anything.
Oh, XJ900s. Like, don't get it twisted. I didn't have Nikes. I had bikes. From Sears.
I wouldn't change years. My childhood for anything.
Flat ass soul. Feet be hurting.
I remember I bought my mom bought some. I was in the seventh grade, right? Reminiscent. I had some female LA Gears. They were black.
I remember
those. Right?
But they were, hold on. They were purple.
With the white LA Gear on the back.
And they were purple.
Stepping high.
So they were purple. So I took the marker and
marked it black.
But how do we get the LA Gears? It was on Centinella Avenue over there, down the street from that Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles down in Pico. And we got them from a dude out of a trunk at my Aunt Valerie's house. And bought them for like, even mom was trying to willow them down, trying to get them to go down. It was like, we ended up paying like $25. And mom was like, she was pushing. Like, he is not, I can get somebody like this.
Yeah.
And $25 out of the back trunk of a Coupe de Ville of a Dope Boys that he got from somewhere else. So yes, like, this is awesome because it's not more of like this conversation isn't like, oh, who was poorer or who knew who was poor.
It's relatable.
I just think it's awesome, and it's good to hear like the various point of views of poor. Like, you're poor, you didn't realize till after what you experienced. Mm-hmm. Then your mom realized and knew it when she was going on. And then my poorness was, I knew I was poor. We were operating out of it to the point of where, like, I'm going to the store with a $5 food stamp, right, to buy bread. And coming back, you don't spend it on no candy. Like, you're supposed to get some bread, and that's what you're supposed to get. Make sure you double check it's not moldy, right? And so,
but you appreciate where
absolutely.
You are now, right?
Yeah. I mean, it makes it that much sweeter.
Oh, there's nothing in the world I would have rather had than mine. I had a great childhood.
No,
I had a wonderful childhood.
I would have changed a few things.
Like,
but those are things that shape you. Those are the things that shape you, too.
Yeah.
And then as you, I'm sure, Alana, as you went through your career, those intangibles that you got from your mother and through your lived experience, it creates that grind culture for you.
No question. I mean, there is I would be nothing without those challenges and struggles. I'd be nothing without the sacrifices that I saw my mom go through. And I remember when I got to the point where I could secretly pay her car insurance every 6 months. And, you know, I would be the one that bought Brianna school supplies. And my mom always provided for us. I don't want to paint a picture.
No,
where
no, you're
like,
not.
Woe is me, this, that, and the other. Like I said, we had a great childhood. But to get to the point where I could take some of the burden off of her.
Let her breathe.
It was a blessing, and to be able to pay for school myself and finally get all those stupid student loans paid off and, you know, just to come from, I think my parents or my mom specifically, it's like, those are the types of stories. That's what the American dream is. You come to this place or you try to make your life better than you had it. And you want your kids to be more successful than you were. And my mom did that. And now, you know, there's nothing in the world I wouldn't do for her, because if not for the way she was, I wouldn't be nearly as successful as I am. She's an amazing woman. And, you know, to think of this, could you imagine? I mean, they left Cuba legally, but it took them 5 years to get out. And imagine if you guys take the stuff you have right now and someone were to, the government rushes into that room where you are, and you basically have to just give them your keys to your home, everything you own, the clothes on your back is what you can take. You walk out the door and you have to go to another country. That's what they had to do. I can't imagine. And she hasn't been back since, and she won't go back until the communist regime is completely over, which may not even be in her lifetime. Mm. But that's what they had to do. And they never bitched about it. They never complained. They came to this country and they made it and they figured it out. And that's why I am the way I am. I can't even imagine. You know, we complain about everything now. I can't imagine what that would have been like. To be uprooted from everything you knew, go to a country, don't know the language, have no friends, have no life, have no job until, you know, you figure it out. So, yeah, I'm fortunate to be where I am because of her.
You have the opportunity to get up and experience everything you're experiencing because of what your mom had to endure for you to be here and be present today.
No question. So I'm very
that's part of your story. So,
yeah,
you know, own that thing.
You know? I do. I own it.
I love Cut to It, and I love it even more when you download us and subscribe.
And you can follow us on social media too, Smitty.
Where at?
That's at Cut to It on Instagram.
What about Twitter?
At Cut to It.
Facebook?
Cut to It featuring Steve Smith Sr.
What about online?
And you can follow us at CutToItPodcast.com, where you can buy merch
and you can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
I got all my answers I got all my questions answered.
That's what I'm here for, brother. CutToItPodcast.com.
Hey, everyone. I am so excited. The Black Effect is live. This April 27th, the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with a Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and have it shared with the Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event to be at. You won't want to miss this, because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill of your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
It seems like there's a lot that you're into. You're a woman. You got a lot of interests. You are with a wine brand, and you also have this foundation that you were talking about earlier around dogs. Why is it important to you to have these different things going on outside of your day-to-day job with the MLB Network?
Well, I think it's so important to have balance. You know, I think this is the first time in my life where I've had work and life balance. It's always been such a grind, you know, trying to get to the next level and you know, continue to prove yourself and, you know, achieve bigger, stronger, faster type of situation. And now for the first time, I've been doing this for 15, 16, 17 years. So it's nice to have a balance between life and work. And, you know, leaving the Dodgers was not an easy decision. And they were so good to me. And I will forever be indebted to that organization. They treated me like family, which is not to say that all organizations do that. A lot don't. And I was very fortunate to be there for 7 years and cover some pretty incredible things and meet some really amazing people. But Guidry's is a passion project for me. I'm very much into rescuing animals, particularly dogs. And I adopted Guidry when back in 2009. And it just opened up my mind and my heart to the need for adoption and fostering. And big cities, Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, Dallas, Miami, have a massive, massive overcrowding problem in shelters, and hundreds of thousands of dogs get euthanized on a yearly basis just because of overcrowding. And, you know, LA and, you know, the inner cities and some of these bigger cities have a huge problem of
stray dogs and
people that don't. Our people, Latin folk, don't always understand, like, you know, and Black folks too, don't always, it's just a different, like,
they don't understand my the responsibility family
of an animal or an how animal. To treat an animal. Yes. And it's not, they're not seen as parts of as a member of the family. Yep. So just education, that's important to me. So Guidry's is a passion project of mine, and the wine stuff, I'm just a scout and seller consultant. I enjoy having a side hustle. I enjoy diversifying income. It's not my company, but I'm just a consultant for it. I love to drink wine. I love to have friends over, entertain, and I like to be busy. I'm not good idle. I will always do something, and it allows me to, you know, make some extra cash and continue to fly mama out here.
What is a consultant for wine?
So basically, Scout and Seller is a company that was started about 4 years ago in Dallas, Texas, by a woman. It's clean crafted wine, so it's no added sulfides, no added preservatives, no added sugar. Just like all the good stuff without the bad stuff. We can't promote health benefits. I'm not suggesting anything medically.
No, I'm not saying that.
Disclaimer.
I just love how you said that, but I'm just asking on the consulting part of wine because, yes. Like, what do you
mean? So I just like sell wine. I sell wine. Like, I have a website.
Yeah.
It's like scoutandcellar.com/Alana Rizzo. And okay. People can go buy wine from me.
Like Mary Kay.
Kind of.
Yeah.
But it's wine. It's not, yeah, it's not rocket science.
So I need to go to Alana when I figure out, like, what kind of wine I need to pair with what meal. Like,
yeah.
You can't put the Moscato with, like, the steak.
Your
steak on a stick. Yeah. You can't put the Moscato with that.
Let me tell you something. That black folks go to Moscato.
Listen, when Drake rapped about Moscato on So Far Gone, everybody went to get Moscato. It was a rap.
That was actually the first wine that I tasted Moscato because it was
so sweet. A
lot of sulfites. A lot of sulfites in Moscato.
And sugar. But because
it's a dessert wine.
Yeah. It's a dessert wine. It is known for dessert wine. Yeah. But
it's known for getting you tore out the frame. That's what it's known for.
I was going to drink some Alizé.
Hey, Moscato was like old English,
that's
right?
So
that's what I said.
It's like
St. Ives.
It's like Donald Duck orange juice, 8-ball Moscato.
Yeah,
Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
Yeah. Those are the best. Flamin' Hot Cheetos. Flamin' Hot Cheetos are the best.
This might be super random and old, but was Guidry named after Ron Guidry?
Yes, yes. So, and I always joke that Guidry was a southpaw.
I'm going to give you a little more. So when I was young, I grew up in Syracuse, and we used to go watch the Chiefs play. Guidry used to babysit me when I was younger.
Oh my God!
That's a story. Stories,
man. You know what? That true explains story. Everything.
Yeah, he did. So we'd go see the Chiefs. Bobby Cox was their manager back in the day.
Oh,
Craig
my
Nettles,
gosh.
Kerry Dineen, all the old school ones. Yeah. So when you said Guidry, like my, because I go way back with him. Obviously,
he still lives in New Orleans.
Wow.
It's funny. I interviewed him for something on MLB Network, and I told him, I said, "Listen, I named my dog after you," and he was like, "Oh, that's nice." I said, "No, wait." I said, "I also named my foundation after you." So, so that's who it's named after.
That's cool.
My dad's from New York, and you know, before I was covering the Rockies, I guess I was a Yankee fan. I just love the name, and there was already a Jeter in the family, so I named him Guidry.
Yeah, as soon as you said that's where I went to. I was like, that's cool. That's really cool.
So it's Guidry's Guardian Foundation. Mm-hmm. And now my dog's name is Bentley after Dierks Bentley because I love country music. So
you recently had Hank Aaron's wife in studio. What was that experience like talking to her?
She's such a lovely, so classy, just such a lovely, lovely woman. And obviously still very emotional of the passing of her husband, mm-hmm. who's an icon in this game. And a giant of a man, literally, and just a wonderful, wonderful human being, and had an opportunity because it was the Hank Aaron Award, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. won it this year in the American League, and then Bryce Harper won it in the National League, and to have an opportunity to have her in studio was very special, and you know, Vlad was there, and I was there to do the translation in Spanish for him, and she's just a lovely woman, and you know, what he meant to baseball is so special, and to be able to see her and, you know, kind of serve as the translator between her and Vlad, and, you know, obviously Harold Reynolds was there and stuff too. So it was very special. But we lost an unbelievable man, and this sport lost an unbelievable icon.
I was traveling and had a layover in Atlanta. I've been in, you know, living in Charlotte 20 years now, and I have a layover in Atlanta, and I've had numerous layovers in Atlanta and hadn't paid attention one time. And gate, Terminal E, I never paid attention to, and they have it's the international part where a lot of, and it actually has a really good Delta lounge where it's pretty good,
right?
One of the interesting things is I had never paid attention to the display they had, which was Martin Luther King. And they had a picture of Martin Luther King, and he was pitching a baseball with his daughters, and they had the bat and the ball. Then they had a picture of when Martin Luther King spoke at one of the churches, and they had his robe. And then they had, I believe, his speech, one of his speeches, and it was handwritten. And you could see the ink and all that stuff, and they preserved it. And they had all these little things, and I just noticed 20 years later, that, you know, when I was a kid, I was given an assignment, our whole class at that time, to learn Dr. Martin Luther King's speech. And what I'm getting to is there are so many times that I have been in that airport, but this one time I got to see this display, and I took my time walking around and I read pretty much everything on there and I looked at the pictures and I was like, wow, how ignorant have I been that yet this has been at my fingertips for so long? So you being a woman of ethnicity, talk to us, because I don't want to miss this opportunity. I don't want to be ignorant, but I am ignorant because the ignorance is lack of knowledge. How much, because I'm not a baseball guy through and through, how much have men of color, men of the Latino descent, impacted baseball, in which we've had a Jackie Robinson day and everybody wears a number, until that modern movie shows, we don't really know the impact. How much have men of color or people of color in baseball, I wouldn't say marginalized, but haven't really gotten their flowers in the way they should because of the history and the lack of color baseball has had?
I mean, you think about the fact that there had to be a Negro Leagues before they weren't allowed to play in Major League Baseball. I mean, you look at Branch Rickey, who signed Jackie Robinson. You just mentioned the late, great Jackie Robinson. Branch Rickey not only signed Jackie Robinson, he also signed Roberto Clemente. Mm-hmm. And to be able to, they had unbelievable impact in baseball. And you look at now the fact that, you know, some of these guys are finally getting into the Hall of Fame based on the Veterans Committee and the Gold Era Committee and those types of things. There's so many, and I highly encourage, before I forget, there's so many opportunities to learn, to your point of going and looking at the display and everything. You absolutely must go to the Negro Leagues Museum in Kansas City, mm-hmm. and you absolutely must go to the Roberto Clemente Museum in Pittsburgh. They are unbelievable. And you're talking about Martin Luther King. Don Newcomb, if you guys are Dodgers fans, you know, the late, great Don Newcomb, you know, knew Dr. King. And did many things in terms of the civil rights movement with Dr. King, as did Jackie. And they had such an impact not only on the game, just making it better from a pure standpoint of skill and athleticism and just baseball IQ, mm-hmm. but what they had to go through and endure just to play the sport that we love is unbelievable. And, you know, it is such an international game now. I mean, you think about the fact that I'm guessing here, I don't know this, but there's probably 10, 11, 12 different countries mm-hmm. represented in baseball. You know, now it's a requirement that we have Spanish speaking translators in every single clubhouse, where before, you know, 2-3 years ago, that wasn't even a thing. We've always had, you know, translators, obviously, for our Korean players, our Japanese players, our Chinese, Taiwanese players. But think about the Latin influence, the Black and Latin influence of players that have come from Cuba, the Dominican Republic, you know, Venezuela, Puerto Rico, which I understand is a part of the United States. But, you know,
I know what you mean. Yeah.
But it's a huge impact that they've had on this sport. And now they're finally being able to, they're making changes to the Hall of Fame, the baseball hall system, to be able to recognize some of these great players.
Yeah, Buck O'Neill just went in this year. Minnie Mendoza.
Yeah,
and I think it's one of those things where it's you always have to take the time to pause and reflect. Like, it's so easy to reduce down to Hank Aaron. You just remember those visuals of him, you know, rounding the bases and breaking Babe Ruth's record, but not remembering that he was getting hate mail right before he was getting ready to break that record, or he was doing this during Separate But Equal. So he was often having to book his own travel because he couldn't be with his white counterparts, or him and Jackie Robinson getting batteries thrown at them, or getting spat on, or rocks being thrown at them. And you even brought up the Latino players. Like, a lot of them in the early 1900s, they would not list that they were Latino so that they could play. Mm-hmm. So they would I'm not going to say disguise themselves as white men, but they would make sure they didn't list what their ethnicity was so that they could play. And this is even before. So I think
they removed their heritage to just be given an opportunity.
Yeah. Well, and just to survive, honestly. Yep. I mean, so it's the reason. It's the reason that when we come over to the United States, and you know, people come into Ellis Island in New York, that people are. I don't even know if my last name is really Rizzo. It could have been like, you know, something super long that was very ethnic.
Yes. So Smith was not there.
I'm gonna guess you didn't come over here with that one. Your folks, you ain't come over here with that one. But I think the other part too is we talk about, like you started off saying, the lack of color in baseball. But I think the flip side of the coin too is remembering that in some instances, baseball has been a barrier breaker, right? When you think about these Latino players in the early 1900s, you think about Jackie Robinson, you think about Hank Aaron, even down to just this year about the All-Star game getting moved, however you feel about that, but aligning with the voter, with the voter laws, like a lot of times they've been on the front lines too. So I think you have to give it as just due on both ends to where, yeah, there had been a lack, but it's also a lot of times they're the ones who are, you know, on the front lines of segregation and all along those lines. So you have to look at it on dual sides of the coin.
And I think we're doing a better job now in baseball of trying to bring Caucasian players, Black players, Latin players, Asian players together. I mean, the Players Alliance that has been formed from, you know, active players and the Mookie Betts of the world and former players, the CeCe Sabathias of the world, but it's not just African-American players that are involved in this. It's, you know, everybody coming together and for the same way that a man needs to stand up for a woman and say, hey, make sure you guys watch this all female broadcast. It's the same thing when you have a guy like the Clayton Kershaws of the world standing next to the guys like Mookie Betts of the world and saying, hey, he's my teammate. He's my brother.
Yeah.
If he doesn't want to play on this day, I'm standing with him as a human, not as a white player, as a human being standing next to my teammate and my brother. And I, you know, we have a long way to go, but I am proud of the strides that, to your point, that, you know, I do believe baseball is making, because it is a global game and it is an international sport.
Good to it. Good to it. Let's get down to it. Good to it.
Hey, Gerard, where did you get that t-shirt?
You mean this thing?
Oh, yes.
I got it from CutToItPodcast.com, where we have exclusive merchandise. Shout out to our guys at 704 Shop. But yeah, you can go on, buy you a t-shirt, subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey everyone, I am so excited. The Black Effect is live. This April 27th, the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with a Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and have it shared with a Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event to be at. You won't want to miss this, because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill of your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
I do think, for a long time in baseball, some of the considered the founding fathers are people that necessarily don't always have not represented the whole culture of baseball. Like Cecil Page had been playing baseball a long time, but yet some of his records, because the Negro League was not even recognized as a real league.
They're just starting to integrate that.
That his stats weren't there, or even in football, like, so, you know, statistically, they weren't recording people, but it wasn't, they weren't recording them because of the color of their skin. They just didn't have the bandwidth to do the statistics. But in baseball, it's always been statistics. They've always captured, right? And they talk about the Lou Gehrig's, the Babe Ruth's, you know, the Hank Aaron's, but there's even people before them that were doing things that didn't get an opportunity to capture that because they said, well, this individual is a person that we don't really deem acceptable, so we're not going to acknowledge what they were doing 3 or 4 years before they, before Babe Ruth came on the scene as Babe Ruth, mm-hmm. right? You know, so I appreciate you answering that and just talking about it, but it was also one of those things that I noticed what I missed, and it was right before my eyes over all the years that I've traveled. So I was just wondering how many things have you kind of sometimes don't get the opportunity to talk about because the people that are, you know, asking the questions don't always willing to be vulnerable and say, hey, I was ignorant to this.
No, I appreciate the question and I appreciate your honesty with it. I do think, I mean, I can't say it enough. You have to be, I'm not a proponent of erasing history and acting like it never mm-hmm. happened. I'm a proponent of learning from it and moving forward. I think it's so important to see what all of the African-American players did, and that Negro Leagues Museum, it is a must see.
It's
and
on the list.
We have very few off days in baseball. But one off day I had was in Pittsburgh, and going to that Roberto Clemente Museum was mm-hmm. one of the highlights of my career. Not to mention they have a winery downstairs. So you can just, you know, wine and baseball. There you go. If there would have been a bunch of dogs there, it would have been the best day of my life. But it's important to be able to understand what all of these people went through. I mean, just to be able to play a game, just to be able to survive, just to be able to provide for their families, you know. And another thing too, I think we're in a dangerous territory.
Yes, we are.
Along more of what you were saying, Steve, about, you know, just because I don't like the behavior doesn't mean I don't like you. I think we're in a very dangerous territory that just because you disagree with somebody does not mean you have to cancel that person. Yeah. I think we're in a very dangerous spot of cancel culture, I think. And another thing, when it comes just to professional athletes, about you may not like the behavior, but you can still like the person. I think fans, people not a, as, you know, not a professional athlete, need to understand that you guys are people first and players second. I think we idolize celebrities, professional athletes, musicians, to the point where we forget that they are people first, and we forget that they have families and feelings. And yes, I know they get paid a lot of money. I get it. But it doesn't mean that you can treat people with such disrespect and vitriol. And that's something that frustrates me too, you know?
And because then it, ultimately it comes out as the athlete was stuck up or the athlete was this, where it's like you don't tell the full story of, hey, I interrupted that individual's birthday party, or he and you know his
or just the spewing that you guys get on the field, or the things that, you know, and it's like, and God forbid you say anything back.
Oh yeah,
because then you're the bad guy. So I think it just comes down to respect in general. I don't think it's that difficult, but it's tough. Seem to have gotten away from that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, Alana, we really appreciate your time, man. This was awesome.
Thank you.
Like, I hope you're
welcome,
you,
you
I hope
guys.
You
Thank
enjoyed
you.
It.
No, it was fun. Yeah, I really enjoyed talking to you, and thanks for the opportunity, and keep in touch.
You are a unique person. You are well worth it. You are competent. And most of all, you're lovable. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It. Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr. That is me. Is a production of Cut to It LLC, Balto Creative Media, The Black Effect, and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From Cut to It, executive producer Steve Smith Sr., co-host Gerard Littlejohn, talent and booking manager Joe Fushi, social media team Wesley Robinson and John Cho. From Balto Creative Media, Cut to It is produced by Brian Baltashevich and Meredith Carter, with production assistance by Alex Labreck, production coordinator,
Taylor Robinson. Theme music by Alex Johnson. Lyrics and vocals by Anthony Hamilton.
If you ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know.
Cause you know it's on.
It's on.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.